Right now, the price cap that the government has put in place is around 30 pence per kilowatt hour, roughly. So prices have about doubled as far as the consumer has seen. If the true wholesale price increase was to be reflected in consumer bills at the moment, the price that you should be paying for electricity should be closer to maybe 50 or 60 pence per kilowatt hour. So there's massive government intervention there. So while, of course, bills have doubled, and that is very significant for some households, especially those households with on lower incomes, you're going from 15 pence per kilowatt hour to 30 is you know it's huge, but it's still not at 50 or 60 pence per kilowatt hour, which we would be the truly reflective cost of electricity if full pass through were to happen at the moment.
Yes, energy prices have been increasing in Europe through the year, with governments having to intervene to ensure everyone is safeguarded. But the bigger worry is winter. So, is Europe prepared for it? We'll find out on this podcast. Stay tuned. Hello and welcome back to yet another episode on the Mission Shunya podcast. Hope you're doing well. Shunya means zero, and this podcast for the previous 90 plus episodes has covered a range of topics around the global net zero carbon transition. As you heard briefly at the start, we are going to discuss about Europe on this episode. But before we get there, quick request to share your appreciation for the podcast by rating and writing a review on iTunes, Spotify, or any platform that you use. We are hitting 100 episodes soon, so it'll be good to increase the show's visibility among all the podcasts out there. Thank you very much in advance for that. Now on to the features segment. Winter is coming, and Europe has been preparing for it for the last few months in terms of energy security. I wanted to get in touch with someone who can be candid, but also someone who follows the space. And to combine both, I have the pleasure of getting my friend onto the show. So who is our guest and what does this organization specialize in?
Hi everyone, I'm Matt. I work as a principal analyst at LCP Delta, mainly focusing on demand-side flexibility markets across Europe.
Hi Matt, so now you're in one of the hottest markets in energy in the Europe and especially in UK. So how has the journey been in dealing with the uncertainty around the energy markets in UK? And how did you get there eventually?
It certainly is exciting at the moment. There's a lot going on. The markets are exceptionally volatile. So just a bit about, where I am, what I'm doing. So I work for a company called LCP Delta, and we work in what we call the new energy transition. And we focus a lot right across the value chain from kind of downstream to upstream. So by downstream, I mean more on kind of the consumer end, focusing on households, what they're thinking, deployment of business models. And then we cover right up to the kind of upstream, looking at the power markets themselves and how those are developing and our assets are being deployed in those markets to capture value. Of course, I don't cover myself all of these things. I mean, I think it would be quite impressive if, one person could cover the detail on all of that. I generally focus on the markets around demand side flexibility in my day-to-day role.
That's interesting. Exactly. That's one area that we'll definitely get into the conversation. But more, as you said, the company looks at a broad set of things and right across the value chain. That will give you an entire good perspective of what's really happening. I mean, globally, when we look at it from the outside, especially the markets in Europe, we hear about the price volatility. The energy prices going up, and especially in UK, there have been calls for setting up price caps for electricity bills and things like that. So how bad is the crisis now?
Sure. Yeah, it's a good question. And I can imagine from the outside looking in, you hear lots of things about the European energy crisis. And I think the reality is it is bad. The prices have, more than quadrupled in some cases. The thing is, though, a lot of the price volatility is happening in wholesale markets. So larger traders and those holding positions in those wholesale markets are, of course, being affected by this. Consumers, as you alluded to, are largely being protected or shielded from this through price caps. If they were not to be shielded and prices at the domestic level were truly reflective of current wholesale market prices, you would have a huge amount of social unrest, in my opinion. The fact is that prices at the moment are so high that if you had to pass it through to your typical household or your domestic consumer, they just would not be able to pay the bills. You would have a huge amount of people, many more people in real actual poverty. So governments across Europe are stepping in and are introducing all forms of kind of subsidies and price caps and various mechanisms to really make sure we'll try and protect households.
But I do understand that there is some amount of pass-through that's happened, right, in the past, especially because for me, the other benchmark is to look at the public charging tariffs for electric vehicles. And I've seen a lot of price rise happening there. I see a lot of operators increasing tariffs significantly in that market as well. So there is a pass-through indirectly that's happening.
Definitely. So also what you'll be seeing there, so the price caps that are coming into effect are primarily targeted at households. So through your household electricity or gas consumption. And why EV charging is having more pass-through, especially with kind of public charge points, those operators of those charge points are companies and they're providing a service that's not direct to a household. You know, you come along to a public charge point or, you know, a highway charge point and you're plugging into that charge point voluntarily. The system doesn't view you at that point as a domestic consumer. Those companies setting up those charge points or the charge point operators, they often are buying power on the wholesale market, and they are passing that increased price all the way through to those who are charging at those charge points. So definitely, when it comes to EV charging, I think there's public EV charging, should I add. You are seeing a much higher degree of pass-through of those high prices. To give you an example, though, of how consumers on the domestic level are being somewhat shielded.
Sure.
I'll give you some very rough numbers around kind of electricity prices in the UK. And I guess rather than focusing too much on the absolute amounts, it's more about the relative amounts.
Correct.
So we could say prior to the energy crisis last year, early last year, your typical consumer could be paying on the order of 15 pence, 16 pence per kilowatt hour of electricity. Right now, the price cap that the government has put in place is around 30 pence per kilowatt hour, roughly. So prices have about doubled as far as the consumer has seen. If the true wholesale price increase was to be reflected in consumer bills at the moment, the price that you should be paying for electricity should be closer to maybe 50 or 60 pence per kilowatt hour. So there's massive government intervention there. So while, of course, bills have doubled, and that is very significant for some households, especially those households on lower incomes. You're going from 15 pence per kilowatt hour to 30 is you know, it's huge, but it's still not at, you know, 50 or 60 pence per kilowatt hour, which would be the truly reflective cost of electricity, a full pass through were to happen at the moment.
That's very interesting. I'm sure, like, as you said, even 50 pence to 30 is like a significant number, almost doubling. That's a significant dent in people's saving. Now, when we look at the entire crisis and the tipping point, it kind of seems like the war is a big cause. And when you talk about war, Russia's influence on the natural gas is significant. So how much of UK is kind of dependent on Russian natural gas? I'm sure like it's not as dependent as, say, Germany. But why is UK facing the heat at this moment?
Sure. No, it's a really good question and one that comes up quite a bit. So if you look at the physical supply of natural gas into the UK, a very small percentage, you know, pre the whole war came from Russian gas. We're talking single-digit percentages. I would have to check the exact numbers, but we're talking kind of around, say, 4%. So very low, basically. And that's because the UK has its own gas fields. It also can get some of its gas from Norway. It gets gas through also a lot of gas through LNG, liquefied natural gas. The UK has the most LNG terminals in Europe, kind of per capita. So the UK has a huge ability to be able to bring in natural gas from other parts of the world. However, the natural gas markets are global markets. So even though there's a difference in physical supply and where the gas is coming from, these are global markets. So when the price increases somewhere else, the markets, you know, equilibrate and gas prices rise in the UK too. Now, where the difference really comes in is that when it comes to kind of actual physical supply, the UK, in theory, should be able to get gas throughout this winter through its LNG terminals. It's just at what cost that comes at. Whereas a country, there are some countries more, say, like Germany, where there is a physical supply risk at times because they physically might not be able to get in enough gas at certain times. So while that risk does, of course, exist for every country, it is considered to be somewhat lower in the UK given all the LNG terminal capacity that the country has.
That's a good point, because when it's generally put in the media, it's like, okay, the prices are high and there is going to be supply constraint. But as you rightly said, maybe the physical supply is a different issue, but rather, more importantly, the market prices are going to be high. So that's a different issue altogether. So that's an interesting take on how UK is positioned. Now, when we look at UK as a country, and I've known it for a few years, been following the markets for a few years, especially on the demand management, supply and demand management, it has been a leader in a way, kind of having like contracts well in advance for, say, demand response and long duration energy storage projects and so on. So how essential is all those projects at this point in time? Is it really going to help in this winter?
No, I think you've hit the nail on the head. At LCB Delta, we look right across Europe and we do see the GB, the Great Britain market, because Northern Ireland is part of the Irish market. We see the GB market as being the most liquid and most advanced market when it comes to demand side response. And just generally as a wholesale market, you see a lot of offshore traders active in the GB market just because it is so liquid. It's very open. It's deregulated. So you're completely right on that end. And definitely GB has been a pioneer in developing a lot of demand side response management services. One of the reasons for that is because GB is an island. So there's not as great a degree of interconnection with neighboring countries. Of course, there are significant interconnectors across the sea to onto mainland Europe, but this is nowhere near the same level of interconnected capacity that you would have, say, between, for example, say, France and its surrounding neighbors, between, say, you know, Belgium and Germany and France and those sorts of regions. So the UK is much more reliant on its domestic generating assets. And another key factor around this is the high levels of renewable penetration. So the UK has quite an advanced grid in terms of when it comes to renewable deployment. And of course, renewables are intermittent. And the whole notion of supply side meeting demand starts to get thrown out the window because you got to start matching demand more to supply when you have a lot of intermittent renewables on your system. So born out of that situation, the intermittency situation, of course, renewables also is non-dispatchable. You get short-term variations in output. GB has been a pioneer at developing a lot of these kind of different demand-side management services, right from kind of shorter-term timeframes. So GB is developing some of the fastest-acting ancillary services in the world at the moment, acting at a sub-second level. So and that's where all the batteries come in, because batteries, as you know, fantastic at responding very, very quickly at a sub-second level.
True.
And then they are also much further out, the services procured further out, also kind of to provide demand response. And being trialed this winter, there's a special demand-side flexibility program being introduced just now by the system operator in the UK called National Grid. And this is specifically targeted at enabling households as well as commercial and some industrial users to flex their demand and be rewarded for it. So they'll get kind of remunerated for reducing their demand at times when the kind of the system is tight and prices are high.
I was exactly going to come to that question, asking about, is the market really prepared for the winter ahead? And with this program, do you think that it is better prepared? Or what are the other measures the market and the government is taking to kind of ensure that the winter is smooth and you don't have major challenges coming up?
No, it's a good question. And I think there is a lot of concern around this winter and what this winter is going to hold. I mean, so just a brief aside, I know your listeners are located all around the world.
Correct.
I just want to be very clear. You're going into winter. It gets cold here. It gets cold in Europe. At the moment, temperatures are around 10, 12 degrees. And, they're going to approach zero as we get into kind of December, January. And that's, of course, increases the demand for natural gas, because we use a lot of, in the UK, we use a lot of natural gas for heating.
Correct.
Exactly, central heating. And we also use a lot of natural gas in the UK as well as across Europe to generate electricity in gas-fired power stations.
Correct.
So we obviously, you know, it's very closely linked to the winter, the weather, and you know, how cold it gets, and that will dictate largely how severe the situation becomes. So right now, we've actually been quite lucky with the weather. It hasn't been too cold. We haven't had any massive cold snaps. And that's been really fortunate, because this leads me to my first point around answering your question. What are governments doing across Europe? They're building up gas reserves. So most of the, or every country in Europe will have a certain degree of gas storage. And the target ever since pretty much the start of the war in Ukraine and the kind of increase in volatility of the markets and the risk of supply constraints, the EU as well, and this has been reflected in the UK, sent out directives to member states to increase their gas storage reserves by as much as possible. They had a target of 80%. That's been now exceeded. Countries are continuing to fill their gas reserves as much as they possibly can. You have countries like Germany, their live trackers for this. I have one open in front of me now. They have 99% of their capacity filled, gas reserve capacity filled.
Interesting.
And that could meet up to 26% of their annual consumption. So they have actually managed to hedge quite a lot, say a country like Germany, because they have significant capacity for reserves. Obviously, this varies quite a lot. The UK currently has 100% of its capacity filled, but the UK's capacity is a much tinier percentage of the overall demand. So filling 100% of the UK capacity only results in meeting 1.3% of annual consumption. So much, much smaller. And part of that links to the point I spoke about earlier, how the UK has access to a lot of LNG terminals. So it's traditionally not needed to have such large storage capacity. So I think certainly storage capacity, you know, that's an absolute kind of key point, gas storage capacity. Next point, I won't go into a lot of detail because we've been discussing and maybe we can pick up again, is around demand side management. And then another key kind of point is a turn to coal. So the UK and Europe has been a pioneer in kind of decarbonizing electricity and its energy sectors, moving firstly to kind of away from coal to natural gas and from then natural gas onto renewables. However, what we're seeing this winter, in order to secure supply, we're seeing a lot of coal power stations coming back online. So the UK has secured, can't remember the exact amount, I think it's on the order of about 3 gigawatts of additional coal power plant capacity that retired last year. They're bringing it back online for this year for special winter contingency contracts. And we're seeing this repeated a number of times in a number of other places across Europe, including Germany, also bringing coal power plants back online just in order to ensure that, you know, the lights can be kept on and people can stay warm this winter.
Well, that's interesting. A range of options that, especially at the last one, I think it's turning to be like every country is taking that as a last resort, but bringing the coal power plants back on grid. So that's very interesting. Interesting about the German numbers, because for a long time, it was always perceived that Germany didn't have the capacity to store gas. But, well, that's a good number to have, and at least here as of now, thinking that Germany has a good quantum that's already stored that could serve a long period. But the other side, the International Energy Agency also has been recommending for a long time now, switch to heat pumps, move away from gas and go to heat pumps. So you have been working on this space for a long time. And when I read about it sometime back, I don't think the economics was working around. Is the economics now much better for heat pumps in general?
Yeah, no, it's a fantastic question. And I'm glad you brought it up, because there's another point I didn't mention, which is exactly what you're talking about, is other kind of demand side measures around, say, energy efficiency, as well as the move to more efficient heating devices, such as heat pumps. And the short answer to your question is yes, the economics are looking better, and they are looking relatively better because of the current energy crisis.
Okay.
So important to note, everything is more expensive in across Europe right now. Gas is a lot more expensive. Electricity is a lot more expensive. But given that a heat pump has a COP, a coefficient of performance, of your on the order of, say, 3, or even you know really good ones can be above 3, it means that you're using one unit of electricity to generate 3 or 4 units of heat, just by the you know thermodynamic principles of a heat pump. So heat pumps are super efficient, and that's why you know the IEA is saying you know, turn towards heat pumps. They're an option to kind of help alleviate some of the supply side constraints. The EU Save Gas for Winter plan also has kind of targets around or kind of encouraging member states around heat pump uptake and energy efficiency. And the economics of a heat pump largely comes down to what we call the spark spread.
Mm.
So that is the difference between the gas price and the electricity price. So if that spark spread is, say, on the order of 4 to 1, so that means that electricity is 4 times more expensive than gas, which used to be the case in countries like the UK and Germany as well, a pre-energy crisis. It basically means that the economics of a heat pump can never really stack up, because heat pumps, you would need to have a COP, your coefficient of performance of your heat pump would need to then be better than 4. It would need to exceed the spark spread. Otherwise, you're never going to get a payback on the heat pump.
Interesting.
And you've got to consider the fact that the heat pump itself, the installation of the unit, is more expensive than, say, a gas boiler. So what we've seen now, because of this energy crisis, is prices have increased, as I mentioned, of gas and electricity, but the relative difference, that spark spread between gas and electricity, has narrowed. So giving you a couple ones, in Italy, it's somewhere around, say, 2.5 to 1. In France, it's maybe also in that kind of region, somewhere around 2 to 1.
Interesting.
The UK, the spark spread is narrowed to about 3 to 1. And in Germany, it's completely changed and is now also kind of closer to 2 to 1. And so with those spark spreads, those relative ratios between the price of electricity and gas, long as you have an efficient heat pump that has a coefficient of performance, a COP of, you know, greater than, say, 3, you will eventually get a payback on the heat pump, even though its capital upfront cost is more than a gas boiler.
In terms of payback compared to the different pricing, what was the range of payback that you were expecting in terms of years?
So it varied a lot depending on you know the country, and also subsidies impact this quite significantly. So it's difficult to give it a single price, because you can give a price before subsidy, a price after subsidies. The subsidies change quite a lot, and the underlying prices of gas and electricity are also changing. So these paybacks are changing all the time. So, but to give you some idea,
That'll be good.
The paybacks at the moment are starting to come in the UK below 10 years. And that's very important, because if your payback is over 10 years, it's not a true payback, because a lot of times you might have to replace parts of the system or components kind of around the 10-year mark. You know, some heat pumps will last, you know, say 15 years plus. But generally speaking, I think you know the industry is saying if you don't really have a payback under 10 years, no one's really going to take that option. Well, not a sensible, economic, rational person will take that option, just given the fact that there will be replacement costs in the interim. But we're seeing this, the payback drop significantly. I think now in, for example, Germany, given the latest prices, paybacks are, you know, much closer to, say, kind of 5 years or even less in some cases. So certainly the economics of heat pumps are looking a lot better at the moment. Although, once again, just to stress, everything is much more expensive. So it's a relative payback. Obviously, using your gas boiler these days is, you know, is also a very expensive option in and of itself.
No, that's very interesting. On the, as you rightly said, now I kind of understand when you mentioned the range of payback in terms of years. For something like solar, it's relatively easy. But is it a challenge because of the technology or a lack of technology advancements in the product per se? Or why is the price high? What do you think is the reason?
So it's a really good question. And so I spent last year, all of kind of 2021, working at the UK Department for Business, Energy and Industrial Strategy as an energy advisor, working specifically on low carbon heat? So these are exactly the questions we would grapple with, you know, all day long, really. And a lot of it does come down to there's the fuel side, right? So the cost of electricity, really, for a heat pump, you're putting in electricity. And the way that, and I'll come to the capital side in a bit, but this just on the fuel side, on your running cost side, it largely comes down to the cost of electricity. Mm. And when you look at how electricity tariffs in Europe in general, and I'm including the UK in there, there are a lot of additional levies and taxes that are traditionally being added onto your electricity bill versus your gas bill, versus your natural gas bill. And so from just a purely fuel side, and that comes back to those points around spark spreads, that's why electricity is so expensive, is because you have all these green levies and taxes added onto your electricity bill that are just not seen in a gas bill. One of the primary reasons for this, so the historical kind of reasons, is that when the green kind of revolution, renewable revolution started, at the time, governments took the decision to add the burden of subsidizing those technologies onto electricity bills. And for the most part, electricity makes up the smaller proportion of most people's bills in Europe, because a lot of homes, especially in the UK, the primary fuel that you're using to heat your home, the one that's going to, you know, win you or lose you elections from a political angle, is going to be gas. You want to keep gas nice and cheap so people can heat their homes and, you know, be happy and healthy. And I think that just as very quick side points on that, another one just for the international listeners kind of listening in.
Sure.
I think it's very important to know that, you know, from a political angle, you need your population to be able to stay warm in Europe. I mean, especially for vulnerable older people, you do see it every year, unfortunately, still. Some of these kind of vulnerable older consumers do die because of cold in their own homes. Their own homes are not warm enough for them to survive in. I think it's just one of those things, you, especially when you're living in warmer climates or climates where you don't really experience a very long winter. I know from coming from South Africa, it's just not something you think about that, you know, in Europe, in winter, if you don't make sure your population is sufficiently heated, a good proportion of them might, you know, have very ill health effects. So sorry for the tangent there. Now, you were asking why a heat pump is more expensive. So we've spoken about the fuel. Then the other side is the capital cost, the installation of the device itself. And this comes down to kind of, I would say, primarily two factors. One, a gas boiler is a very simple device. So a lot of in the industry, they often call it a flame in the box. And that's all it really is a simple heat exchanger where you're just heating water running through that system. A heat pump is a more complex machine. It's a more complex operation that's going on with a heat pump. So just by its very nature, there are, you know, more components, and it's going to cost more. And then there's the installation side of things. There are fewer qualified installers. It requires more knowledge and know-how to be able to install a heat pump than a gas boiler, and that also drives up the price.
No, you made a valid point about people's lives, because recently the European summer was very bad, especially this year, and a lot of numbers are coming up, a lot of lives lost because of the heat waves in particular. So I'm sure countries in Europe don't want to have that repeat again in winter. So now, moving back to the question again, considering all this that you're seeing around the gas supply, gas rationing, and everything around, do you think the governments are better prepared to kind of sail through this winter now? Or am I putting you in spot?
No problem. Yeah, I think it is a complex question. You know, what position are governments in this winter, really? And I think it's a bit of a million-dollar question. You know, I think different people will give you different answers. For example, at LCP Delta, we're doing lots of forecasts around how many hours of loss of load we expect there to be in the system, on the electricity system, this winter.
Okay.
So the system has design conditions that the operator has to meet. They have to design to have a maximum of 3 hours of expected loss load within any given year. So that's what they statistically calculate. They need to have reserves such that In the worst case scenario, there would only be 3 hours over the year of outage. And these numbers, these forecasts, not only for the UK, but across Europe are varying all the time. So some of my colleagues have recently run a model, and they showed that the current loss of load expectation would be around 80 hours, potentially, in the UK this coming winter. Now, that's obviously significantly higher than three. And you've got to remember, we're in an advanced economy where businesses as well as households expect, or even you could say demand, that when they turn that light switch, the light, you know, will come on. The concept of, you know, load shedding or not having access to power when you need it is almost unheard of. It's unacceptable. You know, from a political angle, from a social angle, it's just unacceptable. So I know UK, along with rest of Europe, are doing their best they can to try and ensure security of supply this winter.
Fair. That's a fair point. The big saying is always keep the lights on no matter what, and now keep people warm in winter. I think that's the next wave of thought that's going to ride the winter.
Sure.
Now, Matt, a lot of interesting insights from the conversation. Now, back to your favorite topic finally, because I ask guests who come on the podcast to kind of share something about one action item or something that common people can probably take to kind of shift to a sustainable lifestyle. Now, considering your experience, I will give you another opportunity to pitch people why should they invest and buy a heat pump.
Sure. No, that's always happy to have the opportunity to do that. I'm going to start, though, Grish, if it's all right with you, giving one point that everyone can do.
Sure.
And this is this applies no matter whether you are heating or cooling, and that is to turn the thermostat down.
Fair.
So one of the big things, you know, in terms of buying a heat pump, for example, I know it a bit better for the UK. Right now, if I call up a heat pump installer and ask them to please come and install a heat pump, I would be lucky to have that heat pump installed by, say, February or March next year.
Interesting.
So right now, for me, for example, installing a heat pump is not an option for getting through December and January. It's not a realistic option. And the best I can do to help save bills and help improve the overall resiliency of the system is to use less gas and electricity. And the best way you can do that, the simplest way you can do that, is by turning the thermostat down. So a lot of people, culturally, whether you say it's right or wrong, they'll try and heat their homes to, say, 20 degrees Celsius. But we know you can be perfectly comfortable, you can be fine, you can be healthy if you heat your home to 19 degrees. That difference doesn't sound like a lot, but that 1 degree difference can result in up to 10% savings on your gas bills or on your energy bills if you're using electricity. And as I said, the same applies for those kind of listeners in warmer countries. Same applies, you know, if you're trying to cool, you've set your AC to 19 degrees, you're going to be a lot more efficient if you set it to 20. I couldn't tell you exact percentage savings.
The numbers you say are very much correct, or 10 to 20% per degree Celsius. And we kind of say like 24 degrees Celsius for the AC setting is very good.
Perfect. Exactly. And then for a heat pump, my heat pump pitch. Basically, heating with a heat pump gives you a different experience to heating with a gas boiler. A gas boiler is traditionally, in the UK and in some markets around Europe, they are significantly oversized.
Hmm.
So what I mean by that is that your peak heat loss from your dwelling, when it's, say, 0 degrees outside for your typical home, is going to be, say, on the order of 7 or 8 kilowatts. That's the heat rate loss when it's 0 degrees outside for a typical dwelling. And what your gas boiler can do, it can put out, our one here in the cupboard right now, can output up to 30 kilowatts. It is vastly oversized. So I can whack it on and it can have my house warm very, very quickly. Now, heat pumps don't work like that. They don't cycle on and off. Heat pumps like to be slow and steady. So, and that's more efficient for system operation as well, because you want to avoid cycling of the compressor. So what you actually see is, for homes that have heat pumps, rather than having these big cycles, hot, cold, because that's what happens in a gas boiler home, you have a much more consistent kind of warmer temperature. And I know in the beginning, some people kind of go, oh, it's strange to get used to, because it means at nighttime, it stays warmer than otherwise. So usually like the temperature in our house drops down to, say, it could be as low as, say, 15 or 16 degrees at night, and then it will warm up when we wake up. With a heat pump, you'll maintain that temperature through the nighttime of, say, you know, 18, 19 degrees, because it's going to be more efficient in the long run for the heat pump to run slow and steady rather than cycle. And it also doesn't have that ability to turn on and quickly heat up your house, just given that you want to size your heat pump correctly. You don't want to oversize a heat pump, because unlike with a gas boiler, for every additional kilowatt of heat pump capacity, it's a lot more expensive. So if I put in a 24 kilowatt or a 30 kilowatt or a 25 kilowatt gas boiler, doesn't really impact me. The cost difference is maybe £100 between those different options. It's negligible in the long run. But for a heat pump, every increase in kilowatt of output, it's significantly more expensive. It's maybe £500 or £600 different on the capital cost. So you want to have an appropriately sized heat pump.
Wow.
So you're gonna to your listeners, definitely, I agree with you, get a heat pump. It's better for the environment. Our grid is decarbonizing. Heat pumps are becoming more efficient. You're using free latent energy available in the environment, and they're amazing. Heat pumps are almost like magic. You put in one unit of electricity or one unit of energy, and you can move and get out three or four units of heat inside. It's fantastic. When you first tell people about heat pumps, they almost don't believe you. How is that possible? But I mean, they just are great devices, very efficient. Can't recommend getting a heat pump enough.
Wow. I can really sense the energy that you have when you make this pitch, and it looks very interesting. I don't actually need a heat pump, but I definitely, when I visit UK and other places, I will definitely check the technology.
Surely you have AC? You have an AC though, right?
Yes. It's actually, I mean, for me, especially living in the southern part of India, I don't need even that. I don't need even that. But definitely, I'll give this efficient machine a try. Matt, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the podcast and having known you for quite some time now and following your work in the last few years. I definitely, towards the end of the conversation, I really sense the energy that you have towards this subject. Thanks very much for taking time to join me on the podcast today.
Of course. Thanks to all your listeners as well, Girish. It's been fantastic being here with you. And, you know, to your listeners, you know, feel free to check me out on LinkedIn or have a look at what we do at LCB Delta. Kind of aligns very closely with all the topics that we've been discussing today. But thanks very much as well, Girish.
So yes, as it stands, it looks like Europe, which had a range of measures, including voluntary gas demand reduction measure of about 15% reduction targets that was set earlier in the year, along with a range of policy options and a major call to stock up gas, probably have resulted in better gas management. Hopefully this continues and hopefully the winter is a smooth sailing. But you can definitely take action to reduce demand by evaluating options like heat pumps as an alternative to gas heaters. It could definitely pay off in the long run. Finally, the easiest action item is to check your thermostat. A 1 degree Celsius variation could mean a 6 to 10% savings in minimum, but it could also be higher in a few cases. So please do keep a check on that. You also have smart thermostats in the market, which could easily pay back in like few months' time. So yes, hope you enjoyed the chat today. Thanks again to my friend Matt for coming on the show. And also a special thanks to my friends at Terra Generation, who continuously provide good artworks for the show. They do a lot more in climate, biodiversity and sustainability. And if you need an expert, you can contact them at terrageneration.com. I will be back in 2 weeks' time with yet another interesting conversation. Until then, this is Girish Shivakumar signing off. And as always, thank you for listening.